Hold on a second. I'm trying to had my words pulled up here to for the meeting. Now I can't get it. So just a second. There we go. Okay. All right. The time is 9:04 a.m. on July 26th, and I am convening this video conference meeting of the Personnel Committee of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, Governor Abbott's suspension of certain Open Meeting Act requirements due to COVID pandemic, and the association's antitrust policy. All information disclosed or discussed is to be used only for carrying out the business of the association. Proper notice of the meeting was filed on July 16th, 2021 and published in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of the notice should be attached to the summary of the minutes of this meeting. A quorum is achieved as all three members of the committee are in attendance. Also in attendance are Board Counsel Shelby Bates, General Counsel Jackie Risen, Executive Director Bart Bowles, Association Employees Jarrett Terry and Topping Haggerty, and Texas Department of Insurance Representative John Peters.
Okay.
So item one on the agenda is consent agenda for the minutes of the last personnel committee meeting, which was held on January 13th. Has everyone had a chance to review those minutes, and do we have any changes? Anybody? Okay.
I'd move approval.
Okay. So we will then, we have a motion to approve and a second. Who seconded?
Second.
Okay, so that was James. Okay, so resolved that the Personnel Committee of the Board of Directors, Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association, approves the written summary of the official minutes of the January 13th, 2021 Personnel Committee meeting.
Assuming we don't need a vote since all committee members have either made the motion or made the second, but do we do need a vote, Counselor?
Well, I think since you set it up as a motion, yes.
Okay.
Okay, all approved, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.
Perfect.
Okay, so moving on to item two, consideration and possible action on the non-salary benefits provided to the employees, including the insurance plan renewals. Bart, did you want to add anything here?
Yeah, I'll mention a couple things.
Okay.
If you don't mind. I did distribute the survey of insurance benefit plan pricing and renewal that came in from our insurance agent, sent it to the committee. I won't put that on screen, but there were two changes in our benefits. If you can see my cursor moving right here on the premium for the health insurance plan, there was a small increase in the insurance premium of 10.94% for the health insurance benefit plan. And then in the dental plan, right here, you will see there was a renewal premium increase of 3.99% for the dental insurance plan. For those two, there were absolutely no changes in the coverage provided by the dental plan. There was a small change for the health insurance plan involving emergency room copay and I believe the out-of-pocket for emergency room. So just a small change there. Very, very few changes.
I think it was the urgent care copay, right?
Urgent care, that's what it was.
Yeah, not the ER.
Not the ER, urgent care.
Yeah.
And then long-term disability insurance, term life, AD&D, both of those renewed at the exact same rate as last year. So with those small changes, the 11% increase in premium and a small coverage adjustment, the health insurance plan, 3.99% renewal premium increase for the dental plan, we think that's reasonable, and I'm not recommending any changes in the health insurance benefit plans. I just wanted to see if the committee had any comments or suggestions.
No, I don't have any comments or suggestions. I did notice that on the dental, there were two other quotes that with similar coverage that were just barely cheaper. Was there a reason you didn't look at those other two quotes? You just wanted some continuity? Were y'all's dentists not in those other plans? Was there a reason for that?
We haven't had a problem for the employees that have dentists on plan. They're pretty consistent across the plans. I'm the one that has a dentist that is not on anybody's plan, but that's okay. The reason being is I am very hesitant to keep changing plans for small differences in premiums. If there's a substantial change in coverage or substantial change in premium, I think that warrants considering changing plans, but I like continuing plans and being consistent. It's just easier.
Yeah. And the premium difference was so small. I just wondered if there was a reason. So I appreciate you. It is for the continuity of the coverage. So that's good.
So Robin, I wanted to mention two things, and these are things for the committee to contemplate. I'll first talk about, I have here on the screen, item seven. In item seven of these non-salary employee benefits, I want to talk just a moment about the carryover of vacation leave. If you remember last year end 2020, the committee recommended the board adopted a one-time increase in the carryover of that vacation leave from 40 hours per employee to 80 hours, primarily because employees with the COVID situation couldn't use their vacation leave. And it was permitted, employees did carry over 80 hours. We're having the same situation this year. And I'll report more on the COVID tomorrow during the board meeting, but the COVID situation seemed to have gotten better until recently, and Austin has just changed its risk level. So there's gonna be a lot of vacation leave to carry over again this year. And just looking at the hours between your three employees, we're probably gonna all at 40 hours, at least 3 weeks apiece of vacation leave are gonna be eliminated. So the option would be, there's two options really. There are three options. One, do nothing. Leave it at a 40-hour carryover at year end. Two, implement an 80-hour carryover again. The third thing, compensate the employees for some of the vacation leave. What I would recommend is for the second year in a row, allow the 80-hour carryover, just because it's very difficult for someone to utilize that time. When they're sitting at home, they might as well be working. So I'll stop there and see if you have any thoughts or if you have any suggestions of what you have seen done in the marketplace.
And you don't have concerns about the impact if someone uses 80 hours?
You know, right now, we have to coordinate with only three staff. We have to coordinate so much as it is. And we plan, even if someone's taking 1 or 2 days, I don't have a concern because we have cross-trained and we have cross-coverage on so many things. And for those items that we don't, through advanced planning, we get them done before that person's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. So it's easy with the small staff to manage that, but that's the only way we can address it.
Okay.
A question, board. So the three primary employees, all three of you carried the 80 hours over from last year, correct?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And so you're recommending to consider that again, 80 hours. So let's look down in 2022. With one of you having 4 weeks of vacation on top of the normal, 2 weeks, you'd be able to have 6 weeks of vacation time in calendar year 2022?
Well, no, because we would carry over 80. That'd be 2 weeks.
Right.
And then would accumulate another 120 hours. So that would be 3 weeks during the year. So maybe 5 week maximum. That would be the max that would accumulate in 2022 because we all accumulate 10 hours per month.
Okay.
Now, with that, it can be managed that there'd be no more than 2 weeks continuously or contiguously taken. So it could be spread out over time and managed. We wouldn't want someone to be out of the office 5 weeks continuous. So we can manage it, but I'm definitely not recommending carrying over more than 80.
Right. But
just with, it's a unique circumstance that truncating those, the carryover at 40 seems a little bit, you know, aggressive in light of the current health conditions.
I'm in favor of, because of the pandemic, allowing the 80 hours again, as long as we have some type of plan in place to manage that, where it caps the number of hours you can use, number of weeks consecutively, to where it doesn't disrupt operations of the association. So I'm very comfortable with granting the same extension this year as we approved last year, with some type of guideline from the executive director to manage it. And I don't necessarily think as a committee we need to see it, but as long as you have something in place that caps it, I'm definitely in favor of that.
Bart, this is Jared. May I speak up for just a second?
Me.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe our employee handbook says anything over 2 weeks has to have executive director approval.
It does.
I definitely favor the 80-hour carryover.
I do as well. So
I did not prepare a resolution on this because I wanted to make sure I understood the sentiment of the committee first, but if you would like to make a resolution to the board of directors to make that change year end 2021, we'll have a resolution distributed to the board to consider in during your report tomorrow.
Okay. So I need to make a resolution now for us to vote on as a personnel committee?
Or to recommend this year-end carryover change again for 1 year or for another year to 80 hours and recommend that to the board of directors.
Okay, so I'll make a motion that the carryover of employees' vacation balances be increased to 80 hours for the calendar year 2021. Do I have a we have a motion?
Second. So moved.
So moved. Thank you.
Second.
So do we need to vote now? All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motion carries.
Okay. Chair Vincent, I had one more thing, and this one definitely does not need an action because it would not come up until next June. So there'll be another committee meeting prior. There'll be a committee meeting in January to consider. But Juneteenth has been added as a holiday. And we do not have that as a recognized holiday in our employee handbook. We have 11 paid days over 9 holidays in the employee handbook currently. So I wanted to pose that for the committee to begin thinking on Juneteenth. For Juneteenth, either to add an additional holiday or consider replacing an existing holiday with Juneteenth. It has just recently been adopted, as you recall. So we haven't had time to do any study on it, but I wanted to put it before the committee and say we'll be asking you to consider that in January.
Okay.
And that is all I had on the non-salary benefit items.
Okay. All right, so moving on now to item 3, consideration and possible action on filling the vacancy of a newly created staff position.
Okay, this is a quick update on where we are. As you recall, we identified the need to combine two staff positions into one, as there was insufficient volume of work to warrant continuation of those two independent positions. So this is an office assistant position that has significant duties on administrative activities, such as answering the phone, screening calls, referring calls, and then some administration support, but also would perform some what I would call basic accounting functions, some journal ledger entries, some posting of receipts, preparing distributions and disbursements, and then also maybe some bank reconciliation. So some limited accounting functions, but still some accounting functions. We prepared a job description on this position, and it was included in the compensation study done last September. And we were provided with a salary range for that position based on the then market conditions. So as previously reported in our discussions on the long range staff planning, we have begun talking with an employment agency and about the position, shared the job description, and have started to receive a couple of candidates. We received some caution from the employment agency that the salary range they feel is completely outdated. They have said that the market conditions from last September to now in Austin have drastically changed and have asked us to consider possibly adjusting that range. So we're in the process of looking at to make sure that our job description is very accurately defined. We do think we need to talk with the employment agency again for two reasons. We want to make sure that they understand the level of person that we're looking for. And then second thing, although we had already started to receive a couple of candidates to screen, I'm going to ask them to postpone this work for a few months. Just because of the COVID situation, this is a position that's going to require a little more training. And we would ask that person to be in the office every day. And that's just not in the best interest of everyone right now. So we're going to postpone that a little bit. So that's a quick status of where this stands. I would like to talk about the salary range adjustment and my thoughts on that. But I believe, Ms. Rickson, that that's something that has to be held in executive session because it's a compensation issue.
I'm not sure about that, Bart, because it's not, you don't have an existing employee in that position.
I was concerned it's not employee specific currently, but
right.
It will become employee specific. So I wanted to ask you, should we be precautionary here?
I don't think so. I think you can do it in open session. Shelby might have a different idea about that.
I agree completely.
It's
okay. Session, Bart. I see your point that you're a small organization, and if people, really studied the matter, they could, you set a structure and then the next person who fills it gets that salary. But until you have the specific person, I think Jackie is completely right.
Well, I appreciate that input from both counsel. I'm a little bit precautionary on privacy, but I also need to maintain compliance with the Open Meetings Act. So thank you for that advice and counsel. So I will quickly give you my thoughts. The salary range was established in the compensation study of this. A low point of $33,955, a high point of $56,591. So the midpoint is $45,273. And just so you know, we use a 50% spread across the salary range. Okay, so 25% low, 25% high. I looked at the range that had been discussed with the employment firm. And they had talked about a midpoint of around 55,000. That would make a range of 41,250 to 68,750 with a midpoint of 55. But that's a substantial change. That's around a 21% shift in the salary range. I'm concerned that that's too high. I just think that's out of range. And is that saying that all of our salary ranges are off by 21%? I don't think so. You have to remember two things. They're looking at their pool of candidates and who they can attract to fill the position. They also, if we go through the temp to perm, there's a percentage compensation that they get for placement at the end. So it drives their compensation as well. So I wanted to at least tell you that range and what I'm thinking, that that's too high. And I want to work with them to possibly find someone between where we are with the proposed salary range from last September and what they've been discussing with me. So any thoughts from the committee?
Yes, we paid, and I thought it was very comprehensive for the compensation study for our staff, exclude executive director. And looking at the numbers, where you have 55,000 at midpoint, I think it would be our due diligence, because this is very recent, is to go back to our person that conducted the compensation study. That's the same firm that did the what our financial audits every year. That was their division, right? So yes. I can't remember, but seemed like it was it under $20,000 for that comprehensive, for that compensation study?
It was right at that. I believe it was very close to that number.
And so my comfort level would be, let's go back to them. Even if we paid extra money, I would trust their data and just share with them, this is what we received. I'm trying to remember the young lady's name that did the presentation to the personnel committee, if not, and maybe to the full board. But we're looking at someone that would be a permanent employee of this association, and a personnel service where you're hiring people temp to perm. They've got a little bit of vested interest. The more compensation we pay, the more compensation they commission they receive. So that's just my 2 cents worth. That if it's low, I'd rather our compensation expert tell us that, and we adjust it accordingly, even if that means, I can't imagine it being more than $3,000 to $4,000 for them to update their numbers in light of what's happened with Cyrus and Austin and everywhere due to COVID-19.
Well, I want to hear from the rest of the committee, but I think I should update a couple of things here. First, you know, my standard practice is annually when the Social Security Administration provides their cost of living adjustment for the coming year. And they'll usually put that in October each year, takes effect at January 1. But they've already begun to put out their projections and predictions for what that might be for 2022. As you recall, last year, that cost of living increase was 1.6%. This year, they're saying that could be 5.3%, if not higher. So my practice would be to take our existing salary ranges and shift them 5.3% if that were to be the number. So that would be happening anyway. Second point I'd like to make, the lady that did that study from Clifton Lawson Allen, Nikki Milhop, I'm having trouble getting in touch with her. She's one of the outstanding conflict of interest and antitrust annual certifications that I've not been able to get a response to. And my emails are bouncing. She may have moved to another firm. So I'll have to search her. And if she's moved to another firm, it seems like it would make sense to still use her because of familiarity with, you know, our structure. But it might lead to another engagement and some type of fee. So I'd be looking for guidance from the committee on an engagement, or do you want to see a proposal? Or if the fee is insignificant, to authorize me to update that salary range through an employment consultant, but the fee be no more than X.
You know, Bart, that the compensation study was actually done by Clifton Larson Allen. She was the person who did it. So I would imagine they would have somebody who could step in and pick up where she left off. I understand that no one is going to have the same information that she had. But it's hard for me to imagine a company or a firm like that wouldn't have anybody else who could sort of take on this task at this point.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Bart, this is Robin. I have a question. So the employment agency telling us that maybe our salary range is a little low, have they taken into consideration the value of the other non-salary compensation, well, benefits that we offer to employees? Because, you know, I know that the salary is just one part of that total compensation package. And I believe the other benefits that we offer to the employees of the association have quite a bit of value to them. So do they know what those benefits are, and have they taken that into consideration?
You know, Toppy, I'm going to ask you, because you're involved in those discussions with them. We may have mentioned them briefly, but I don't think we went through all the other benefits, did we?
I don't believe we did, no.
No, we haven't.
Now, I know if you're 25 years old, it may not seem like it's that big of a deal, but, you know, I think people that are closer to our age, maybe over the age of 40, can certainly, I think, appreciate the value of those non-salary, you know, compensation benefits that we offer to the employees, like the paid health insurance, the paid parking, the, you know, the 401k and all that stuff.
You know, a simple approach could be to have that additional discussion with the employment agency on benefits, on the precise duties and responsibilities, and the type of individual we're seeking, and see if they have any adjustment in their thoughts on what level of compensation would have to be offered to attract someone.
Because, you know, if we hire the right person and they're a great employee and they're doing a great job, I mean, we could always adjust their salary range later. Just, you know, saying that we could get somebody. I know that, you know, I can go to work at Walmart as a cashier making $30,000 a year because they start everybody off at $15. But I think that this position and, you know, the opportunity for them to make more money and the benefits, we should be able to get somebody with what our range is.
Bart, can I ask, in the job description regarding, it seems to me the salary, maybe the employment agency wants to increase because of the limited accounting components. But as you describe them, they really sound like administrative duties to me. I mean, so, you know, if you talk about like, oh, we want someone with basic accounting skills, that's, you know, you're going to get a pretty good salary, especially in Austin.
Well, Topping pointed that out when we were talking with the firm, the employment firm. And you have to remember, some of these employment agencies, they used to own other subunits, and now they've kind of merged. And so the firm we're using does accounting and finance rather than, and they'll say, they keep saying accounting, finance. We're saying, but that's really kind of a secondary component of this job. It has more probably on the administrative functions. And I don't know that really came across to them. Topping, you participated in that call. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think it did. I don't think they were listening.
So your point is very valid, Shelby.
Yeah, I mean, I think based on what I understand the position to be, I think I could do it, and I'm not an accountant. I mean, it's more administrative. I mean, bank reconciliation, you're absolutely right, Bart. You're going to have to teach someone this, and it's going to take some, you know, concentrated daily training for a bit, but,
We talked about this, and it's not the position where you would say, go make the adjusting journal entries to record X transaction. it would be, we've had this transaction occur. Here are the adjusting journal entries to make. So they don't have to figure out the accounts. I mean, they are told it's this account and this account. So in that way, yes, they're doing some basic accounting functions, but it's truly an administrative accounting role, if that makes sense. So I was planning to ask the committee for some discretion to work with the employment agency and maybe a small adjustment in the range, but nothing substantial. What I was looking for is possibly increasing the salary range now based on the anticipated 2020 cost of living. But we have not seen very many candidates yet. I don't know, and I can't tell you that our current salary range is not going to attract candidates, because we had just kicked off this 2 weeks ago talking with the employment firm.
Well, I think the board certainly, you know, the committee certainly confidence, Bart, in you to know that you have the ability to make adjustments as necessary, but reasonable. And so James and David, do y'all feel comfortable? Just, I guess, do we need to make a motion giving Bart the authority to make the necessary adjustments in the range to basically hire the best candidate for this position?
Well, let me stop you, Robin, real quick. I'm sorry if you get some noise in the background. There's landscapers outside. I think the current salary range has some capacity for me to adjust the starting position. Rather than bringing someone in below midpoint, I may be bringing them in at or a little bit above midpoint. So we wouldn't have to change the salary range. We may need to look at it possibly in January and change it. So okay. I don't think I need to go beyond the existing salary range to fill the position currently, but it's more or less, if the board has any concern or the committee has any concern of me taking that type of step, I wanted to hear about it.
You could also consult with a couple of other different employment agencies and see what they have to say.
We can try it. That universe is kind of trimmed. There's not as many now as there were at one point.
Right. The deeds of the world have taken over that.
Right. So, Robin, that's where I was going. It's kind of a heads up that this is where I'm heading and this is what I think I'm going to do. I don't feel I need formal authority from the committee to make any change. I was just looking for feedback. And okay. I think I've gotten a pretty good dose of that and some direction.
Okay. All right.
Okay, should I move on to item 4?
Sure.
Okay. Sorry, get my notes here. This is a little different approach. I think it's appropriate for mid-year the committee to be advised, as a reminder, under the executive employment and deferred compensation contract that you have with me, that I disclose, here are some things that will be coming up prior to your next meeting, or things that you'll need to be doing at your next meeting, so you're not blindsided, you know what that contract requires. So I thought I'd just mention a couple of things that are coming. First, the annual performance review. And here, as I put on 4.1 in your book, you will see there's a paragraph that describes the tentative timing in Shelby's distribution of the annual performance evaluation. And then the way that process works, Shelby drives the timeline, she collects the information, then she prepares a compilation. Then she prepares and provides to me to distribute confidentially to the committee and the full board of directors. The committee will be looking at that. It's January 11th, 2022 meeting to prepare a recommendation on certain aspects we'll get to in just a moment for the board's January 25th meeting. So that's the annual performance review. I also am required annually to disclose other employment or activities that I've engaged in, working for other entities on a contract basis or anything else I've done where I get additional compensation. That's something, if it arises, I would always disclose it at each meeting. But before accepting, the contract does require that I have executive committee approval of any engagement that will require more than 15 hours per month of my time. Okay. So that is something that regularly we'll go into, and I will tell you now, I have nothing to report on that. On compensation, there are a couple of automatic and there are a couple of discretionary compensation elements. And a couple of those are kind of combined, but I'll explain them. The automatic element takes place on January 1st each year, and that would happen before the committee's next meeting. So I think it's important to disclose that the cost of living adjustment to my base compensation, which is driven by the cost of living adjustment annually that's released by the Social Security Administration for the next calendar year. And as I mentioned, they release that in October each year. My current projections show that that could be a 5.3% increase this year. And it is a substantial cost of living adjustment compared to, I mean, it's really the last 5 to 6 years. It's very significant. The 457B payment is made each January. And in there, it's an automatic payment so long as certain requirements on job performance factors and performance review, those things are met. Those drive the 457B contribution. The discretionary element is whether it is increased from the $18,500 in the contract anywhere up to the maximum allowed contribution amount annually from the Social Security Administration. So last year, that maximum amount was $19,500. So I just want to let you know, as long as the performance requirements are met, there is an automatic payment of $18,500, but the committee has the discretion to recommend up to the maximum amount permitted to the board of directors. And the last thing in that contract that is I would call it automatic, based again on the performance factors that are driving the 457B payment, is the longevity incentive payments. There are no longevity incentive payments in 2021 or 2022. The next one will not come up until January of 2023. So this item was just a heads up. Here's what that contract requires and the role of the personnel committee in monitoring or recommending certain elements to the board of directors. And I'll ask for any questions.
No questions.
Okay. Then I'll move on to item 5. This is a simple item. Just an update on the training that your staff has undertaken in 2021 and some of the additional training that we are attempting to take. You'll see the list there on the screen, the insolvency workshop, several issues forums, the ILTCI annual conference that was held virtually, an annual HIPAA training that my committee in the Penn Treaty matter receives from outside counsel. Then the state of the long-term care hybrid market. This was a drinker Biddle, I'm sorry, it's actually Fagery drinker presentation about 2 weeks ago, very comprehensive on an ever-changing piece of the insurance marketplace that could have implications on the Guaranty Association system down the road. Jarrett and I just participated in a legal seminar last week that Nolga puts on. I believe our council both attended that as well. It was a good seminar. Some portions of it better than others, but it was very good. And Jarrett has attended a Clifton Larson Allen webinar. There are some additional training opportunities coming up this year. I did not mention the cyber training that we're required to take. That is offered through NOLGA, and it's very comprehensive. A lot of the training modules come out of modules offered by the cybersecurity carrier that NOLGA uses. We also have cybersecurity training available through our bank. So we do quite a bit. I didn't list all here, but we do go through a lot of this in addition to regular updates that we get from our firm that we use, KnowBefore, on ransomware training and passwords and things like that. For the rest of the year, Toppy is in process of locating a website design and maintenance training. This is going to be pretty extensive training. There's a lot of ongoing changes that Topping has to make to the website, especially during the COVID situation, because of the Open Meetings Act. She's continually having to get on there and change things. And then with our address change, we're in the process that she's going to have to update the ribbons for our adoption of a new logo, posting the summary document in both English and Spanish. She's already finished all that, but Topping has to do a lot of website work, and she would like to see and have additional training on website design. Jarrett is going to do some 1099 training. That is continually changing. They've actually added a form or two in the last few years. They've added some of the guidelines and reporting. So that may be something annually to make sure we stay on top of those changes, especially when we are administering a couple of books of business in-house. Our 1099 reporting responsibilities are increased. Under our outsourcing, when we have a TPA administering a book of business, the TPA has those 1099 reporting responsibilities because they are the ones dispersing the benefits. We are dispersing benefits directly from our office for two blocks of business, so we have 1099 tracking and reporting responsibilities. So there will be some additional training in that. I know there are a couple of additional IR conferences coming up. I've been working on some of those, and possibly some additional NOLGA conferences. Next week, there's an education seminar presentation after the MPC meeting, or at the tail end of the MPC meeting, on engagement of the board of directors and different support that an administrator can provide to the board. It's going to be unique because there will be presentations and then breakout sessions. We haven't done that virtually yet, but we're going to do virtual breakout sessions and join back together. And I've been asked to facilitate some of the breakout sessions. So that will be interesting. It may fall in the realm of training or training others, but I just wanted you to be aware that we do look for all opportunities to train and continue to do that. A little foreshadowing to 2022, this will be time to probably update some of our training on sexual harassment training and, you know, inappropriate activities in the office. That is something every 2 to 3 years we like to do, although it's not an issue for the office. It's just good to hear and refresh everyone. There's appropriate conduct and inappropriate conduct. And so we will be working on that as a more formalized training in 2022. Jared or Topping, anything on the training that I might have missed that you'd like to add?
No. I don't have any.
Okay. Questions from the committee?
No questions.
Okay. Then I'll move right along. Annually, each committee of the board of directors is asked to review their charter to see if there are any changes. On screen, I'm showing you the times that the personnel committee has revised its charter. A name change for the association in 2011, a little change in the role in the committee's or the role of the committee in my evaluation. That was done in 2016. And then in 2018, some timing adjustments in doing my annual performance evaluation. So Jarrett and Topping and I have been through the charter for the personnel committee. We have not seen anything in the committee's performance of its duties that's not accurately reflected in that charter. We have not been able to identify any need to change it. And no comments from the committee?
No, I have no recommended changes.
Okay. So we have an executive session on the agenda. I may have one small item to report to the committee. And then we'll also have time for council if they have any advice I'd like to provide the committee. So I would recommend we have a brief executive session.
Do we want to do that now or at the end?
Actually, that is going to be the end. We'll come back out of executive session and talk about the next meeting.
Okay. All right, then. So I'll pull up the wording and topping. You let me know.
Okay. So if you can read the out of public session language, then I'll let you know when we're recording in executive session.
Okay. The time is 9:49 a.m. on July 26, 2021, and I am recessing the regular session of the Personnel Committee meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association in order for the committee to meet in executive session pursuant to the Open Meetings Act.
And we're back in public session.
Okay. The time is 10 a.m. on July 26, 2021, the executive session of the Personnel Committee meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association has concluded, and I am reconvening the regular session pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act.
So, Robin, under item 8, which would be to address any issues addressed during executive session, I am not aware of anything in that discussion that would rise to the level of an action.
I agree.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to make a change here. There. Sorry, I readmitted Mr. Peters to come back. Welcome back, John. Can you hear me, John?
Yes, sir. I'm back.
Okay. Just to let you know, we just came back from executive session and there is no action for the board to take. So we're moving on to our last item, item 9.
Okay.
So Robin, item 9, in the materials, we have been included the calendar of activities that shows it shows all the activities of the committee during 2021. Those that didn't complete it and those that we anticipate. I think most important note is the next meeting of the committee is scheduled for January 11th, 2022. And unfortunately, it appears that our chair, Ms. Robin Vincent, will not be in attendance at that meeting as she will be leaving the board of directors at the conclusion of her term, September 30th, 2021. And the staff, the association, just want to thank you, Robin, for your service on the board and as chair of the personnel committee, your professionalism and commitment. You've done quite a bit of work and is sincerely appreciated.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure working with all of you.
Same here.
Thank you again.
So, Robin,
I'm sorry, can I mention one thing? January 11th, 2022 is a Tuesday.
That's right. And the scheduling on this, we can always adjust it. What we're trying to do is, since we're doing most of these meetings now remotely, even if the board meetings were to be hybrid and in person, we believe remote committee meetings and virtual meetings would be better. So we're trying to space the time between a committee meeting and a board meeting. So if the committee wants items prepared, we have time to assemble it before the board meeting. Doing the meetings the day before have always been as a convenience to minimize travel. That's kind of out the window now. So we targeted Tuesday. I know I said Monday. We can adjust that day, but you're right. It does say Monday in the book, but it is a Tuesday.
Okay. I just want to make sure which was correct. So January 11th. Okay.
But you did trigger me to say something about the spacing between committee meetings and board meetings. We're going to try to observe now. It's just easier.
Right. Okay.
So would it be better to have that on Monday, January 10th, to keep the meetings on a Monday? Yes.
I'm open. I'm flexible.
Yeah, I'm fine with it on Tuesday. I just wanted clarification.
Let's do Tuesday at 11th and just ignore my Monday comment. Monday and Friday meetings are always tough. I like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday meetings. So Tuesday, January 11th will be the next meeting. And Ms. Chair, that's all we have.
Okay. So the time is 10:04 a.m. on July 26th, and this meeting of the Personnel Committee of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association that has been held pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act is adjourned.